Obviously, these 7 ideas present just a few different, challenging things you can work on to both experience immense personal growth and boost your self-discipline. The key is to find something that will force you to put yourself in uncomfortable situations to grow your comfort zone. Let's review. Discomfort builds character. By voluntarily putting yourself in uncomfortable situations, you learn how to deal with adversity. Subsequently, you become tougher and more self-disciplined whenever you'll have to deal with new, demanding situations. Exposing yourself to cold temperatures can teach you how to deal with painful, short-term situations. It will help you develop more awareness of your own responses and how you can keep going despite overpowering discomfort. From time to time, try to do away with something you usually need, a certain habit or an item. It will help you appreciate it more while at the same time building your toughness. So in case such a situation happens out of your control, you'll be better able to handle it. Rejection therapy. Making it a goal to get rejected rather than accepted is an effective way to get used to the mental discomfort of being told no. Exposing yourself to failure is a valuable exercise to stay humble and experience more learning opportunities. A large part of self-discipline is persistence. If you develop a habit to get up each time you fall, you'll have an easier time using your self-discipline in other situations that demand willpower. Develop a habit to do the most difficult things with no hesitation. The longer you let yourself think before doing something that you find challenging, the more difficult it will be to gather enough willpower to do it. If you don't allow yourself to hesitate, soon you'll develop a habit that will make dealing with weakness easier. Difficult goals require a great deal of mental toughness and self-discipline to achieve. If you constantly give yourself new difficult objectives to reach, you'll not only achieve more success in your life, but also learn how to keep going despite setbacks and difficulties. Learning a foreign language is one of the best self-discipline building exercises because it's a long-term goal, requiring at least 6 to 12 months of your focus, and because it can cause a lot of frustrations tempting you to give up. Other skills that require a lot of patience and thus test your self-discipline and help you grow, include sports requiring mastering proper technique like golf, tennis, or chess, cooking, gardening, creative work, reading, or knitting, and communication skills. Challenging activities to help you grow as a person are a perfect way to develop more mental toughness and self-discipline. They usually require you to replace your default, comfort-friendly choices with uncomfortable but ultimately more beneficial decisions. As a result, you'll improve your self-control. These goals and activities include mastering honesty, trusting yourself, not complaining, and overcoming shyness. Chapter 4. Live with intent. The outer world follows your inner world. If there's chaos in your mind, there's chaos in your external world. If there's no peace in your head, everything around you can lead to stress. If you have no discipline over your inner thoughts, you're unlikely to enjoy a lot of self-discipline in your everyday life. Few people live their lives with intent. Everybody is too busy, too late, and too distracted to slow down and pay more attention to what is happening in their heads. Consequently, their inner life passes them by, influencing their outer world without them being conscious of it. Building self-discipline is immensely more difficult if you only focus on the external aspects of it and disregard the power of your mind. If you develop a calm mind, capable of handling its thoughts, filtering useless ones, forming positive ones, and seeking justifications for doing the right things instead of coming up with excuses for not doing them, the act of self-control will become much easier. How do you start living with more intent? It all starts with habit, sharpening your awareness with quiet repose. As famous management consultant Peter Drucker said, what gets measured gets managed. In the case of our thoughts, what gets observed gets managed. While it's impossible to manage all of our thoughts, according to various estimates, we have up to 70,000 thoughts a day. We can pay attention to the ones that occur most frequently and control them, if we're only aware of them. An average person doesn't pay a lot of attention to her thoughts. She assumes she is her thoughts and her feelings. If she has a feeling of anxiety, she is anxious. If she thinks she is stupid, she is stupid. If she feels she can't resist the temptation any longer, she is not self-disciplined. She associates herself with the fleeting thoughts that should report to her, and not the other way around. How can you build permanent self-discipline if you give so much weight to your thoughts? Every doubt in your mind will ruin your resolve and solidify the belief that you can't become a more disciplined person. The realization that you are not your thoughts and that they are passing sensations just like smells, sights, or sounds will help you realize it's you who's in control of what you think. When you develop this ability, you'll gain the power to shape yourself as you wish. The key to reaching this state of awareness is to regularly engage in the act of quiet repose. However, as much as I would like to encourage everyone to develop a regular habit of meditation, not all people enjoy it and find it worthwhile. Sitting still with your eyes closed can be too exhausting or just boring. If you've tried it and didn't find it effective after doing it for at least a few weeks, here are a few alternatives worth testing. Listen mindfully to music. And no, you're not unlikely to have a meditative experience with heavy metal. Music most conducive to tuning down the world around you and exploring your inner world is instrumental or as soothing vocals harmonious with the rhythm of the song. Just like with meditation, the objective is to make the world around you disappear and reduce your being to the simple act of just being there, or in this case, just listening. Practice yoga or tai chi. Yoga and tai chi are one of the few activities that get you as close to meditation as you can without actually meditating. Maintaining a pose while focusing on your breath and letting go of the tension in your body is almost the description of meditation. The only difference is that you're not supposed to sit still, but engage in the meditative experience with your entire body. Out of all the 7 ideas listed here, it's the only type of a meditative experience that requires a teacher to perform properly. Technically, you can learn it from books and videos, but it's not an optimal way to go about it. Journaling. The act of writing down your innermost thoughts can also be a meditative experience. It helps turn down the volume of the chatter in your mind and helps you discover deeper layers of your inner world. For best results, either journal by hand or do it on a computer without internet access, or at least with email and social media notifications turned off. Otherwise, it's hard to fully immerse in the experience of projecting your thoughts onto a piece of paper or screen. Walking meditation. Walking meditation is originally known as Kenhin in Buddhism. However, the practice of Kenhin is more structured and requires walking clockwise around a room while taking steps synchronized with breath. You don't have to follow this practice to a T. The mere act of mindful walking can be a meditative experience, too. For the best results, go to a park, a forest, or any other green place with as few distractions as possible. While walking, focus solely on the act of walking and your most immediate surroundings. I used to do hill sprints, a 10-minute walk from my apartment. Each time I returned from my workout, my mind was filled with endorphins and naturally more prone to entering a meditative-like experience. Oftentimes, lost in thought, I couldn't even remember a large part of my walk back home. That's precisely the feeling you're after, getting so lost in your inner world that you stop thinking about all the distractions of the external world. Gazing meditation. If you can't stand sitting still with your eyes closed, gazing meditation is an option for you. Known as Tratika in Hinduism, this method of meditation involves staring at a single point. It can be something as simple as a black dot on the wall, a tree in front of you, or a candle flame. Just don't gaze at the sun, okay? Just like any other type of meditation, gazing meditation is also effective at calming the restless mind. It also helps beginners maintain focus more effectively than sitting with eyes closed. Staring at a single point is more comfortable. At times, I practice this type of meditation instead of the regular eyes closed style. It's especially soothing when you're sitting in the wilderness and gaze at something beautiful, say a flower in the middle of a meadow, or an old tree and its rustling leaves. Breathing meditation. While the traditional style of meditation is also about the focus of breathing, in this type of meditation, you place all of your focus on breath. There are various styles you can follow. Some prescribe long, slow inhales and quick exhales. Others recommend slow inhales, long pauses, and then slow exhales. No matter which breathing technique you use, the key is to shift all of your thoughts to the act of deep breathing. Providing your body with more oxygen than usual, most people don't breathe deeply during the day, will have an additional effect of giving you more energy, so it's a good idea to practice this type of meditation in the morning. Gratitude meditation. If the regular style of meditation is too boring for you because you can't stop having random thoughts constantly popping in your mind, consider replacing them with thoughts of gratitude. If you occupy your mind with a certain type of thought, in this case, apprehension, other thoughts will stop appearing randomly, or at least stop occurring so frequently. This makes the act of maintaining inner focus and tuning out the world around you easier. An additional advantage of this type of meditation is its mood-enhancing characteristic. You can't help but feel happier when you sit for 5 or 10 minutes and come up with dozens or even hundreds of reasons why your life is incredible. All of these meditative activities will help you become more aware of your inner thoughts. Once you become conscious of them, you can start living with more intent and control over your thoughts. You'll be able to shift them from negative to positive, or observe them without judgment and let them go. This practice, when repeated daily, builds self-control for your mind. You'll be more capable of dealing with nagging thoughts as well as impulsive emotions which always originate as a certain thought. A craving for something is not hunger. It's a passing sensation that gets easier to overcome if you know that it passes just like any other thought. If you are aware of the thought of, "This looks delicious," and can separate it from your actual state before it turns into the feeling of hunger, controlling your impulses will be much easier. Try depersonalizing the craving by thinking, "My body feels hunger," or "Hunger is being felt." If you're the person observing the emotion, who's actually feeling it? Most certainly not you. And that's a helpful mind-bending trick to handle temptations better. The same applies to thoughts of defeat or discouragement. Just like the feeling of a craving, they are passing. True, they can linger for more than a few minutes, but they also pass. Just like the random thoughts appearing in your mind as you meditate. By simply being aware of this fact, you can grow your ability to wait on these feelings before they urge you to take the wrong action. Please keep in mind, I'm by no means a meditation expert. Some of the types of meditative practices I mentioned before have fluid definitions that can be used interchangeably or at the same time. For instance, you can combine walking meditation with gratitude meditation, or combine yoga and listening with intent to calming music. A special alternative, or rather, a supplemental activity in addition to some type of meditative practice is exercise, embracing the tunnel vision. Meditation is not only something done as a specific activity at a specific time. You can also practice it on a daily basis to become more in control over distractions. Each time you slow down, become mindful of what you do, and focus on the sensation a specific experience gives you, you gain more control over your mind. Each day we miss hundreds, if not thousands, of special experiences just because we're distracted by other things. Oftentimes, these distractions lead us to give in to temptations, sometimes unconsciously. You're late for a meeting, so you grab the first piece of food you can reach, usually something unhealthy, and go on your way. If you slowed down and cleared your mind of the distracting thoughts, temptations would be much less challenging to overcome. Embracing the tunnel vision can help with this. The first component of this exercise is to be able to slow down. You can't do it well if you're in a hurry. If you can set aside at least a few minutes, or just realize breaks between your activities, when you can truly focus on the present moment without worrying about what you're about to do, you can proceed to the second step, becoming mindful. As an example, let's say you're out in the woods enjoying a brief walk. While being in nature alone is conducive to fewer distractions, there's something more you can do to enter a meditative-like state and clear your mind. Pick up a leaf, touch the bark of a tree, or look at a bird or a squirrel. Engage all of your senses. Let yourself be swallowed by the experience of it. Trace the contours of the leaf. Feel its texture. Gaze at its intense color. Smell it. Use your willpower to focus all of your attention on the leaf in your palm. Tune out the world around you. Let yourself feel all these weird sensations of getting intimate with a leaf. In the beginning, you probably won't be able to do it longer than a few seconds. After all, who in their right mind spends a minute or two staring at a simple leaf? And, for that matter, who the heck with a sane mind talks about getting intimate with a leaf? However, the disciplined practice of seeing the little details everybody else ignores not only makes the world a much more interesting place, but also sharpens your awareness. As a result, you become more equipped to identify and deal with temptations before they become overbearing. The problem with many self-defeating feelings and thoughts is not only that they arise, it's that you aren't aware of them and let them dictate your behavior without paying much attention to it. Our minds are incredible at justifying every single action we take. It's only in retrospect when we can say that our decisions were stupid and dictated by how we felt at a specific moment, and it doesn't sound like healthy decision-making, does it? A short attention span is what causes this problem. By embracing the tunnel vision regularly, you improve your ability to focus and thus reduce the risk of making emotionally motivated decisions. Exercise. Talk with your future self. Each time you choose a smaller reward now instead of a larger reward later, you're robbing your future self. We're bad at envisioning our future selves and associating who we are now with the person we'll be in a year. This person sounds like a stranger, not like us. And since it's a stranger, it's easier to claim small rewards now than to wait for better rewards later. After all, we're here now, not in the future, right? In psychology, there's a concept called temporal discounting, the tendency to give greater value to rewards received now or soon in comparison to the rewards received later in the future. You prefer $100 now over $200 in a year, or a free pizza in 2 hours over 2 free pizzas in 6 months. When applied to self-discipline, due to the temporal discounting, you'll give more value to satisfy your craving now than achieving your ideal physique in 6 months. After all, the first reward is real, at your fingertips, and the second reward, and the vision of you in 6 months, is just a concept, something difficult to imagine. The exercise I'm about to describe is meant to solve this problem. We have problems imagining ourselves in the future because we rarely do it. You can solve the problem of the disassociation between your present self and your future self by writing a letter to your present self from the perspective of your future self. Let's say you'd like to lose 20 pounds and get fit. However, you struggle with this goal because you can't give more value to the future reward, healthy physique, over the instant reward, eating food you love. Consequently, instant gratification always wins. Now imagine yourself in the future as a person who hasn't achieved this goal, who decided to rob his or her future self. Make the picture even worse than your current situation. You weigh even more than now, and your weight keeps going up. What would your future, obese self say? Would he or she be happy that you've chosen caving in to a temptation over achieving the long-term goal? How does the perspective of an even worse future affect your self-discipline today? If you imagine every single detail and make it an emotional process of visualization, chances are your future self will cease being a virtual concept and become something real. You can also try the opposite by imagining your future self as a person who has achieved the goal of losing weight. What would your future fit self say about sticking to your goal? How would the path toward the objective look to a person who has already achieved it? It's often easier to imagine reaching the goal and the person you'll become if you visualize the perfect result and then trace back every single step needed to accomplish it, versus figuring it out from where you are now. Exercise. Build your compass. How aware are you of your most important values and priorities in life? How do they affect your decision-making process? When asked, most people wouldn't hesitate to say their most important values include health, family, or freedom. Yet their daily lives don't reflect it because they don't have clear rules regarding their values, a personal compass to guide them. Every several months, make a list of your most important values and ask yourself whether your everyday actions follow them. One of the most powerful forces is the need for integrity. If you uncover that health is of utmost importance to you, but recently you've gained a few pounds and stopped exercising as often as before, it can give you a kick needed to get back on track. Living with intent requires a clear mind and focus. Having a set of clearly defined values and the following habits or rules you need to practice to be consistent with them will help you maintain a steady level of self-discipline in life. Let's review: live with intent. A calm, focused mind is a powerful tool that will help you resist temptations and reach your goals, despite setbacks, failures, and distractions. Living with intent is a must if you'd like to become a person with a lot of self-control. Living with intent starts with sharpening your awareness. The easiest way to become more focused and present instead of distracted and mindless is to engage in a meditative practice. The act of focusing on the inner world and quieting the external world around you is one of the keys to a calm, disciplined mind. In addition to regular meditation, there are at least 7 alternatives. You can try each to see which is most effective at helping you calm the chatter in your head. You can listen mindfully to music, practice yoga or tai chi, try journaling, or experiment with walking, gazing, breathing, or gratitude meditation. You can even try a mixture. Without the ability to see the little things and use all of your senses while doing so, discovering what makes you prone to give in to temptation will be more difficult. Embracing the tunnel vision Exercising your focus on a single thing to experience it with all your senses is helpful to improve your attention span and prevent making emotional decisions. Due to temporal discounting, people are prone to give greater value to rewards they can get soon, in hours, than the rewards they'll get in the future, in weeks or months. Even if the future rewards are bigger, imagining your future self can make the prospect of the future easier to grasp. As a result, you'll stop robbing the person you'll become of rewards just because you give more value to your current self, even if the reward is much smaller and not beneficial for you long term. Have a compass of your personal values. Without a clearly defined set of priorities in life, it's easy to stray off the course and do things that don't reflect what you believe in. Periodically reminding yourself of what's most important to you can help you make changes to regain self-control and fix the crucial things you've neglected. Chapter 5. Burnout and Discouragement. It's not all about self-discipline. It was one of those days when I felt too exhausted to go to the gym, but went anyway. After a demanding workout, I got back home with legs that felt like huge stones and a tense, aching back. I called a friend and we went to a sauna. I thought it would be a great way to relax my body and recover from my workout. Not this time. After spending 10 minutes in a dry sauna, I submerged for a few minutes in a pool of ice-cold water, as I usually do. I could feel something was wrong almost right away. My vision blurred, and I became dizzy. I ignored these symptoms. I thought they would pass in a second. But they didn't. A couple of minutes later, I realized that if I didn't leave the pool right away, I would faint. I climbed the pool ladder out with the world spinning around me. Leaning against the wall, I barely made a few shaky steps before I had to sit down on the floor so I wouldn't fall. For 10 minutes, I fought with intense vertigo and nausea. I finally resigned, asking my friend to call the lifeguard for assistance. It took me about an hour of cooling my neck, lifeguard's prescription, and suffering the worst feeling of dizziness in my life before I could go to the locker room. It took me another 30 minutes of sitting in the car before I was ready to drive, and another few hours of sleep at home before I finally felt well again. The next day, I woke up with a sore throat, painful joints, and full-body exhaustion. I was sick for a few days, unable to do anything productive, let alone go to the gym. It would be a few months before I would be brave enough to go to the sauna again. To this day, I don't feel entirely comfortable staying in a dry sauna for longer than a few minutes. I have since learned my lesson that nobody is indestructible. My obsession with self-discipline went too far. I not only ignored the first signal by going to the gym, but the second one as well, not immediately leaving the ice-cold pool when something felt wrong. Now I pay more attention to my body and give myself regular breaks from workouts and no longer play too aggressively with extreme temperatures. I still challenge myself, but do so in a safer way to avoid overextending myself. If you're anything like me, you may feel tempted to think that you can withstand much more than a regular person. But as much as being mentally tough is helpful, it doesn't mean you should cross all the limits and do things that endanger your health or your life. Stretch yourself, but don't break yourself. Deliberately putting yourself into uncomfortable situations is helpful, but don't forget it shouldn't become unbearable. Every exercise in this book is meant to be practiced often, but not when your body is giving you obvious signals it can't take more. The same applies to your mental strength. While willpower probably depends on whether we believe it's limited or not, and not, like Kelly McGonigal and Roy Baumeister say, depends on your glucose levels. There's a point when discomfort becomes too much to handle. The sweet spot is to stretch your comfort zone to such an extent that you feel challenged, but not too threatened or frustrated. Going past the bearable level of discomfort can result in diminished effectiveness and often in negative outcomes that actually work against you. Hardcore workaholics are proud to work 70-plus hours a week, thinking they're so extremely self-disciplined and tough, everybody should clap their hands when they see them. In fact, what they do is the total opposite of smart. Research has proven that someone who works 70 hours produces nothing more with those extra 15 than a person working 55 hours a week. I used to follow a routine of writing 3,000 words every day. I stuck to it for a couple of months, feeling proud of myself and my ability to write so much every single day. Then one day, my entire willpower was gone, replaced by frustration and overwhelming reluctance. Even writing a single sentence was too much. My routine became too demanding, and nothing but taking a long break could help me get back to writing. If I started with writing 1,000 words a day, and then gradually increased my word count until it felt challenging, but still not too demanding, I would probably have never experienced such a burnout. True, I would only write up to 1,500 words or so a day, but my routine would be more sustainable, and thus, more effective long-term. Self-discipline isn't built overnight. If you want to become mentally tougher and more in control of your temptations, play the long game and prioritize sustainability over quick results. If you want to introduce more discomfort in your life for the purpose of becoming tougher and more disciplined, remember that it's not about putting too much stress on yourself for the short term. It's about desensitizing, gradual and repeated exposure to a stressor. Without proper rest, you won't master new skills quickly, recover enough to have another workout, or stick to your routine for more than a few months. Each time you set a new daily routine or a goal you'd like to achieve, don't forget to schedule break times. It can be 1 or 2 days a week when you don't practice at all. Regular cheat days to have a psychological break from the diet, a day or two of guilt-free laziness when working on a business, or 2 weeks of vacation each year. Positive mindset is essential for mental toughness, and vice versa. The essence of building self-discipline and mental toughness is making your life harder so you can better handle temptations, setbacks, and failures in life. In addition to making you tougher, these exercises can help you appreciate what you have more. Consequently, you become a more grateful person with a positive mindset that will support you on a daily basis. If you start a 30-day cold shower challenge, a month from now you'll gain a newfound appreciation for the 24/7 availability of hot showers. If you start learning a foreign language, you'll become more appreciative of the fact you already speak the most important language in the world. If you skip food for 24 to 48 hours, you'll gain more gratitude for the fact there's always food in your fridge, and you'll enjoy its taste more, too. As I've already covered in my book, Pure and Simple, How to Simplify Your Life, Do Less, and Get More, gratitude is one of the keys to have a positive mindset. It improves mental and physical health, helps make friends, reduces aggression, increases empathy, and alleviates stress and trauma. Working on your self-discipline and mental toughness will help you become a more successful person. However, it's your ability to appreciate what you have and keep a positive outlook that will help you get back on track after a particularly defeating failure or setback. If self-discipline is the only reason why you keep going, one day you can find yourself depleted of your willpower. The second layer of motivation, a positive mindset, will keep you going when you don't feel like doing anything and all willpower is gone. Easy temptations like not eating a cake during a diet, not wanting to put on jogging shoes, or clicking the snooze button instead of waking up early can be dealt with using self-discipline alone. Train your willpower, develop better default responses, and you can overcome the majority of these temptations. Hard, Unexpected temptations and problems challenging your resolve can wreak havoc on your self-discipline. If you've lost a business, willpower and toughness alone might not be enough to get back on track and start another business within days after the failure. Tough, self-disciplined people may feel tempted to blame themselves for everything that has happened to them. Or worse yet, they may find themselves tempted to keep working on the business, thinking that giving up, when it would make sense to do so, would be a sign of weakness. People who can appreciate what they still have, for instance, a supporting wife or the learning experience, have something more useful in such a situation than mere self-discipline: psychological resilience and the ability to move on. If something fails, it fails. Learn the lessons and keep going. Focusing on the positive emotion, gratitude, instead of the negative one, guilt, is what will help you avoid the long spiral down. There's a world of difference between a person who cheats and then blames herself for being weak-minded and a person who tells herself, "It's fine to slip up every now and then. Now it's just time to hop back on the train." The first person will keep blaming herself, possibly for so long and so severely, she'll recognize it makes no sense to continue working on whatever goal she had been working on. The second person, while technically experiencing the same setback as the first, will not make it worse by letting herself feel guilty. She'll pick up where she left off and keep moving forward. Just like I shouldn't have gone to the gym when I felt clear signs of overtraining, you shouldn't always demand perfect toughness and self-discipline from yourself. Move with the wind, don't resist it. How focusing on negativity can ruin your self-discipline. We're naturally wired to focus more on negativity than positivity. In psychology, it's called the negativity bias. Something very positive has a smaller impact on your behavior than something of equal emotional strength, but negative. It's a Monday morning, the fifth week of Alice's diet. She steps on the scales and sees that her weight has gone down by another pound. She's happy and grateful, but she quickly forgets about it because she's been steadily losing her weight for the last 5 weeks. Another week has passed. She looks at the number and freezes. Instead of losing another pound, she has gained a pound. A pound more should carry the same emotional load, albeit negative, than losing a pound a week ago. Yet now, her behavior is completely different. She doesn't forget about it right after stepping off the scales. She keeps thinking about it for the entire day, if not the entire week. She thinks she's messed something up, or maybe her diet just no longer works, and it's better to give up than experience yet another letdown next week. Can you see how easy it is to destroy your entire progress by putting too much focus on negativity? Fortunately, a process called cognitive reappraisal, reinterpreting the meaning of the negative event to give it a positive slant, can help handle this problem. In Alice's case, we can reinterpret it in a few different ways. She can either reinterpret it as gaining a pound of water, thus making it a short-term problem. Then it wouldn't be a sign of her diet losing its effectiveness, just a temporary condition which should prevent any emotional behaviors from happening. She can reinterpret it as gaining a pound of muscle. In some people, it's possible to burn fat and gain muscle at the same time, and that is even better for Alice's physique than only losing a pound of fat. She can also reinterpret it as an opportunity to take a closer look at her diet and make sure she's been faithful to her resolutions. Perhaps she slipped up and didn't notice it. A pound gain this week can help her reverse the trend before it gets worse. You can use cognitive reappraisal for every similar situation to change its meaning and stop yourself from falling into despair. What to do when you're stuck in a funk or suffer from negative self-talk. When working on self-discipline, it's easy to go from one extreme, a lack of self-discipline, to another, being too tough on yourself. Now that you're working on your discipline, you tend to get tougher on yourself and criticize yourself even more often and more heavily than before. Soon, negative self-talk follows, berating you for every single failure or even a temptation, including the ones you were able to overcome. It's clear to see it's not an optimal way to build long-term self-discipline. How do you deal with this problem and empower yourself with your thoughts instead of bringing out your inner critic? Start with developing more self-compassion. In her book, The Charisma Myth: How Anyone Can Master the Art and Science of Personal Magnetism, Olivia Fox Cobain says that the higher one's level of self-compassion, the lower one's level of self-pity. Self-pity brings out all of those pesky negative thoughts and hinders our progress. There are several ways to build more self-compassion and consequently get out of a funk or escape negative self-talk. My favorite one, and also the simplest one, is to make a list of ways to boost your mood that make you feel you care about yourself. Each time you feel stuck or berate yourself for how stupid, weak, unworthy, or untalented you are, check your list and get your energy levels up. I have 31 such things on my list I titled, Ways to Go from Pain to Pleasure and Feel Good Immediately. To give you a few examples, the list contains things as simple as listening to a specific genre of music, including specific tracks, sitting in the sun, or talking with friends, as well as more creative ways, such as giving someone a gift, telling someone I appreciate her, or coming up with new ideas. Make your own list. Read it each time you feel down, and pick a thing or two to boost your mood. It's difficult to come up with ways to lift your spirits if you feel discouraged or frustrated. Having a ready list of proven ways to get better is helpful to remind yourself there are things you can do to feel better, and it's your choice to remain in an unproductive state of mind. You can also get out of a funk by influencing your body language instead of your mind. If you stand upright, light up your face with a wide smile, it doesn't matter if it's fake, and start jumping up and down while waving your hands. It's virtually impossible to stay depressed. Science supports this wild advice. A study conducted on power posing has shown that assuming a high-power body language causes neuroendocrine and behavioral changes. It elevates testosterone, decreases cortisol, and increases feelings of power and tolerance for risk. Assuming a power pose for just a minute or two is enough to make you feel more powerful, and not just have a fake feeling of power. If you suffer from negative self-talk due to being tougher on yourself than on other people, a simple visualization technique can help. Instead of looking at yourself through your own eyes, imagine you're a friend, family member, or anyone else who loves you. How does your perception of yourself change when you look at yourself through the eyes of someone who loves you? A simple realization that you wouldn't treat others you love as you treat yourself can help you eliminate, or at least reduce, the negative self-talk. Don't forget that negative self-talk doesn't necessarily have to come from your inner critic. It can also be a result of a tired body. When you've overtrained, have been following a strict diet for too long, or haven't slept well for the past week. If your body is tired, it's easy to get into a cranky mood and start doubting yourself or thinking that you can't bear anything for much longer. Check your physical state and make sure you get enough sleep, nutrients, dieting can sometimes cause deficiencies, sun, a lack of vitamin D the body synthesizes with sun exposure can possibly cause depression, and quiet time, a hectic schedule can elevate your stress levels. Let's review burnout and discouragement. It's not all about self-discipline. Discomfort is not always a good idea. If your body is screaming to take care of it, don't put it into new stressful situations. Develop a keen sense of your energy levels as well as your general well-being. The point of the exercises in this book isn't to endanger your health or turn your life into a nightmare. While growth rarely, if ever, happens if you constantly avoid discomfort, there's a fine line between beneficial and empowering discomfort and the panic zone when things get too stressful. If you put too much on your shoulders and expect to perform well in the long term, you're in for a nasty surprise. A positive mindset is a necessary part of a personality needed to become a self-disciplined, relentless person. Sometimes your willpower won't be enough to keep going after a particularly devastating blow, or simply the act of constantly being tough will exhaust you. In these cases, a positive outlook can help you get back on track by redirecting your focus from the failure to the appreciation of what you have. Guilt is never a good emotion for a person building self-discipline. It increases the likelihood of making your slip-up even more severe by thinking that the failure is worse than it actually is. Not resisting the temptation to eat a candy bar is not the end of your diet, as long as you don't follow it with guilt-motivated, why-the-hell-not-I-already-failed binge eating. Due to the negativity bias, we focus more on negative events than the positive ones, even if they carry the same emotional weight. You can use cognitive reappraisal to reinterpret the meaning of the bad event and turn it into a positive one. Thanks to this process, you'll avoid the discouragement that can increase the chances of losing your willpower. You can deal with negative self-talk and/or get out of a funk by developing more self-compassion. Some of the most effective strategies, including making a list of ways to pamper yourself, changing your body language to mimic the appearance of a happy person, or looking at yourself from the perspective of someone else. A negative mindset is often also the result of sleep deficiencies, a deficiency of certain nutrients, including vitamin D, or going too long with a strict diet or a workout schedule. Epilogue. We've covered a lot of habits, exercises, and mindset shifts that will help you become a more self-disciplined person. However, it doesn't mean you should start changing every single aspect of your life right away. For the best results, pick one or two things you'd like to improve and proceed from there once you make the changes and become more disciplined. If you aren't fit yet, working on your health and fitness should become your priority. There's no other goal that is more important than developing proper healthy habits. Without a healthy body, nothing else matters. Moving from an unhealthy and overweight person to a fit, vibrant individual is one of the best changes you can undergo to develop your general discipline. With renewed energy levels and a heightened sense of well-being, all other challenges will be much easier and more enjoyable to achieve. Learning how to be consistent and stay the course is the most powerful secret behind mental toughness and self-discipline. If you adhere to your routine and reach a long-term goal in one aspect of your life, achieving the same in other areas will be easier. Success tends to breed success. But first, you have to experience some small wins, and they are the most crucial in the health and fitness department. If you are already a fit person, feel free to pick any other habit or exercise. Ideally, choose something related to your long-term goals. If you find yourself giving up when working on difficult goals, or if you have a tendency to jump from one thing to another without ever mastering anything, choose a difficult skill or sport to master and dedicate yourself to the process of learning. Use it as a tool for self-introspection and building your own arsenal of weapons to deal with self-defeating thoughts and behaviors. Everything valuable in life requires time and dedication. The world wants you to prove you care about whatever you're chasing after. Only the ones who can maintain self-discipline, motivation, determination, and commitment over the long term will enjoy the reward of achieving their goals. If you exhibit this kind of attitude and constantly remind yourself of it I'm sure you'll push through all the obstacles and get wherever you want to get. This has been Daily Self-Discipline, Everyday Habits and Exercises to Build Self-Discipline and Achieve Your Goals. Written by Martin Meadows. Narrated by John Guinepen. Copyright 2015 by Martin Meadows. Production copyright 2015 by Martin Meadows.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.